Dear God, I pray and close these eyes, knock these dice, I pray to win. Like last penny, itching to scratch a million out of one last dollar. Like the difference between 10 seconds, 10 yards, and a touchdown. Like dropping coins into slot machine wishing wells. All the world's a casino. All the men and women are merely gamblers, placing bets, counting chips, calculating risks. And these little bitty arms have tried their hand at boxing with God. Arms, never long enough. Mind, never smart enough to outfox him, because he knows exactly what to do to get me to honestly praying. Where I forget the cliches and all the stuff I say to make up for my lack of faith and trust. When I ain't got nothing else to give except giving up. It's tough to lay your oh-so-visible life into seemingly invisible hands, but at some point, we all end up in the place where Abraham had to stand, offering only hopes, with little to no hope of regaining what we think we stand to lose. But the amazing thing about God is he never takes away our ability to choose. See, I've stood at many forks in the road, put my life on hold, bartered with God for a compromise, trying to minimize my sacrifice, hoping if I raise him a Sunday morning, maybe he won't see my Friday night. But ain't no betting with God unless you bet it all. That's heart, mind, body, soul. So most times, I fold. And with every lie, the stakes get high until I'm in over my head in a debt I'll never repay until this humble hustler asks the dealer to deal him in. Says if he wins this hand, all debts are on him, but we don't believe him. He looks too new to the scene, like he never cashed in a chip, never smelled the scent of newly minted green, but he just smiles and holds his cards close to the chest. Says focus on hearts and let the rest worry about itself. He came to pay debt with death so I could see him face to face. And when it was time to pay up, Jesus stood in my place. And that's how I know there's more to grace than bowing heads and praying over meals. See, it's not how much good we can do. God just wants us to yield. These little bitty arms have tried their hand at boxing with God, and now this heart is going to take a chance at betting it all. So, I am a spoken word poet, and I was born in 1980, which is giving away my age, but anyhow, some of you were too. I was born in 1980, and I'm never sure if that's like the end of Generation X or the beginning of Generation Y, but all I do know is I'm Generation Hip Hop. Anybody else? Like, Hip Hop and I were born right around the same time. Like, when I was growing up, it was baggy jeans, not skinny jeans. When I was growing up, if you had a Discman, it meant you were filthy rich. Because there were no MP3 players, there was no iPod, and if you had a favorite song and you were trying to get it, you had to record it off the radio onto a cassette tape and like rewind it back to the beginning. My sister's in college, and I'm trying to explain to her what we did before the internet, when there was no Google and no Yahoo and no Hulu, no nothing but the library and Dewey Decimal, and you had to pull like the drawer out and like run through the cards. That's how it was for me. And I think one thing when I think about growing up in the 80s and being what I would say is a part of the hip hop generation, I talk to a lot of my friends and they'll say, when I go to the mountains, that teaches me about God. When I'm fishing, I learn about God. I've learned all I know about God from football. But for me, I learned about God from poetry and hip-hop. Hip-hop has five facets. For those of you who are like, what are we talking about? Hip-hop has five facets. DJing, MCing, breakdancing, graffiti, and beatboxing. And one of the first things I really got interested in was DJing. And Pink came out with a song a few years ago called If God is a DJ. And I thought, huh, it's an interesting idea. So I went to look into it to find out what exactly is DJing really. And if we think about the beginnings of hip hop, and I guess what really was becoming the tail end of disco, for those of you that ever wore those outfits, and became the beginning of hip hop, this was back when there were no voices on a record except singers. And people actually played instruments, like in a studio when they went to like make a song. Okay, anyway, so they practiced, they knew how to play something. Okay, so anyway, they played instruments. It was a band and a singer in the studio. They made a record. What DJs did when hip hop started is they took what was called the musical break. The time where the singer steps back from the mic and lets the band jam. So DJs were taking all these breaks from all these different songs and making this completely new musical experience, which is what we now know as hip hop. And I thought, well, if Pink is right and God is a DJ, and then I'm like, whoa, maybe when we get to heaven, God is DJing. I mean, there have to be these big, massive turntables up there. And most DJs have thousands of songs. But God's got all the records ever made in all of time before there were any records at all, actually. Some of the songs we don't even know because they weren't recorded. But God's got them right there. And he's got these really dope headphones, these Beats by Jehovah. And he's got the turntables right there. And he keeps scratching in the pocket, holy, holy, holy. Because doesn't the Bible say that's what we're going to say when we get up there? We're all going to say, holy, holy, holy. And then the angels, they break dance. And, I mean, I read one time that they had these really big wings. So I really haven't figured out exactly how they break dance with the big wings. But they have really fresh sneakers. And that idea was really cool until I started to think about what that means in everyday life. That if God's a DJ and we're all songs, that means he's the one in control here. And I don't know if any of you have ever been to a party. Maybe I'm the only person that partied. But I love to party. And I was not the sip cosmopolitan lean against the wall kind. I came to dance and sweat. And if we're not dancing and sweating, I don't want to be here. Okay, so I'm there, and like right when you get in the groove of the song you really like, I hate it when the DJ changes the song right there. And doesn't God do that to us sometimes? I just feel like right when I'm getting comfortable, right when I'm in the middle of this groove that I feel like I know pretty good, Mr. DJ of all DJs changes my tune. Changes my rhythm. And a part of following God, the part that hip hop, I feel, was teaching me, is that if God's DJing, God's in control of what our rhythm is. God's in control of the breaks. And we've all got the breaks. We've all got the times we felt wounded and we felt hurt and we didn't understand why this slice of our life ended up this way. But Romans 8:28 says that God works together everything for the good of those who love him and are called according to his purpose. So Romans 28 is telling me that God is DJing. He's taking all of your breaks, all of the slices of your life that didn't really make sense. He's making something beautiful, something good. So after I got into DJing, I mean, I couldn't afford the turntable, so okay, I couldn't do that. So then I thought, all right, I'm going to be a rapper. I'm going to be an MC. I had a rap name, Technique. It's the best. Unfortunately, my rap career was short-lived. Because in order to be a rapper, you got to know how to freestyle. And I freestyle very slowly. So people would want to come and, you know, they want to battle rap with you. And they're like, let's go. And I'm like, you give me 3 months and I will write this down. I'm going to tell you what this is. My lack of rap career is what led me to spoken word. Which spoken word is poetry with hip-hop sensibilities. I don't got to stick to the
bars and the music. I get to say what I want to say, like, as long as I want to say, except today, because, you know. So, I moved to Atlanta to go to college. I went to Spelman College in Atlanta. And, AUC. And I went to my first real open mic. I'm talking about the kind of open mic that's like a hole in the wall. It's like a third of this stage with like 150 people in it. You have not figured out how all those people got in that room. There's a guy in there smoking weed comfortably. And I'm a sheltered church girl, so I'm like, the police are going to raid this place. They're going to raid this place. This is going to be the end. And the host walks over real strong to the guy. So I'm like, he's going to tell him, put this thing out. He gives this guy a hug. And I'm like, where am I at? These people smoking weed in public. So I went up and did my poem. And I sat through all the other poets. And I felt in my heart at 19, 20 years old that people crowd into open mics. People are crowded in hip-hop shows because they are searching for truth. And if we think about it historically, that's a poet's role. It's been a poet's role in all these societies that people are looking to the poet to be the truth teller. And I thought to myself, God, these people aren't coming to my church on Sunday. They're not coming to my campus ministry Bible study. They're not even coming to the campus ministry event that we do for the people that are like them. We're doing the game night. We're doing the come watch Love and Basketball and come watch Napoleon Dynamite so we can hopefully get to know you, non-Christian, non-believer. They're not coming. And I said, God, will you give me the words to say that I can come to this room and not expect people who don't believe in you yet to come to where I'm comfortable? Would you give me the heart to go to where people are? And the host of that open mic said something that I've never forgotten. He said, one rule in open mic is you bear your, insert expletive here, soul. You bear your soul. Otherwise, don't get up here. Don't get on this mic. Don't say it. And as believers, we know the first place we bear our soul is in front of God. He's the first person that we're just laid open wide in front of Him. And one thing I've learned being in open mic environments where everything's not sanitized, I feel like sometimes as believers, we want to just put antibacterial over the world and erase the curse words and take out the sex when it's not marital. And we want to do all these weird things to the world, and it's human and it's messy and it's ugly sometimes. But I got to go in there. And God help me, I've got to be the light. I've got to say what God once said in that room. I've got to bear my soul. And I used to think that I had to go up in front of the mic and do this big repent message. Because if Jesus come back tonight, I don't want them to go to hell, right? But I've learned it's not just what I say when I'm on the mic. I better be around so the people in that room can know I live what I say. So I listen to John 1. And obviously you guys know my imagination's a little weird by now. And I remember reading John 1 thinking, I bet this guy's a rapper. I mean, think. Who else would say in the beginning was the Word? And the Word was God, the Word was with God, the Word was with God in the beginning. Through Him all things are made, and without Him nothing was made that has been made, and Him was life. And that life was the light of men, the light shined in darkness. But the darkness cannot recognize that the true light, who gives light to everyone, was coming into the world. He was in the world, and though the world was there through Him, the world didn't even notice. He came to that which was His own, but His own did not receive Him. Even in His own land and among His own people, He wasn't wanted, but to those who believed Him, to those who accepted Him, to those who believed He was how He claimed to do what He said, He gave the right to become children of God. And the Word became flesh, made His dwelling among us. The Word became human, lived here on earth among us. The Word became flesh and blood and moved into the neighborhood. Who writes that if you're not a rapper? Who does that? So I'm reading John 1 and I'm like, okay, I always thought Jesus was beige with the brown hair parted down the middle, like the wavy roller set with the white toga bed sheets thing and the Birkenstocks. I just always thought that's what Jesus looked like. And I'm reading John 1 and I'm like, well, maybe Jesus would have rocked the baggy jeans.
Maybe he had locks and like a goatee. Maybe Jesus is not this thing I've always seen in the painting. And I thought about my friends who know Jay-Z more than they know Moses. They know Black Thought and the Roots more than they know about the disciples. How can I tell them about this Jesus? How can I go into this room and speak about Jesus in a language that they understand? So here's what I came up with. Jesus came in the brand of his own name. Wearing swaddling clothes, love, mercy, and a manger, three wise men discovered him. They had no idea they were leading the world to worship him. He told the angels to hold it down. Decided he was going down to a small town called Bethlehem to grow and consume the stomach of a virgin whose womb would birth the man that would save the earth. The one who would give me my worth. He did more in 3 years than most of us do in 30. He fed 5,000 with 2 fish, 5 loaves, told 51 stories to save millions of souls. He mentored 12 disciples to be betrayed by one, denied by one, doubted by one. He was the one to take on all of our mistakes, plus the weight of all of our secret and known sin, plus the weight of a 110-pound cross that was after they beat him, slapped him, lashed him. He paid the cost. See, I've been watching you. Smoke blunts and meditate. Reading the Bible and any other spiritual text you can get your hands on. You're searching for answers to a bunch of philosophical questions like, what is life and who or what is God? Do we die? And if we die, where do we go? I've been waiting to tell you about this cat named Jesus who has all the answers. Trying to think of a way to describe him to you because he was a man. He is God. Came to this earth, lived, died, then he lived again. This one man started this revolution called Christianity, which has now been watered down to Bible toting and t-shirt wearing and keychains that say, what would Jesus do? But I think if Jesus had walked the earth in our time, I think the source or vibe would have landed his post-resurrection interview and the cover would say, real life after death. It's more than Tupac or Biggie could do. Because all eyes would be on him. And they treat him like Jay-Z or Diddy, asking him, so what is the secret to your success? He'd tell him it's just one word, death. Death on a cross. Life after death and love. Yes, he would have talked about love because he has this way of looking into your eyes and knowing your whole life story without you even saying a word, because that's just the type of cool cat he is. And that's what I've been trying to tell you. He is. He didn't just come to speak, prophesy, and die. He's the only one who looked death in the face, told death holler back, and moved on without another thought. Truth is, I want you to know him. The sweeter truth, he wants to know you too. Jesus Christ is the true spoken word.